So we're starting the Arach Chaim on Parshas Toldot. We'll start right at the beginning on page Kuf Chof Vav, where the Arach Chaim raises some questions having to do with the very first pasuk. But the Parsha opens up, the Eile Toldot Yitzchak ben Avram, these are the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avram, right? And you'd expect to have a list of his kids, right? Eitz of Yaakov. No, Avram holed is Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. That's the opposite direction, right? The Toldos of Yitzchak and Avram should be his children, not his, not his father. Avram holed is Yitzchak. And in fact, we never find any pasuk, immediately thereafter that says that Yitzchak gave birth to Esav and Yaakov. So I mean, Rashi comments on this. Rashi writes the Eile Toldos Yitzchak, Yaakov Esav Amurim Baparsha. Rashi says, look. The whole next paragraph of the Chumash is going to tell us how Esav and Yaakov came to be. The unusual pregnancy of Rivka, the fact that Rivka took a long time getting pregnant, and then the pregnancy was unusual, and eventually they came out. The whole story is going to be told. So Rashi basically says, the Eile told us Yitzchak and Avram, these are the offspring of the generation. The generation of Yitzchak, the son of Avram, is kind of like an opening sentence which describes the entire paragraph which is going to follow. That's somewhat unusual. Most of the times in the Chumash, when we say the Eile Toldos so-and-so, Eile Toldos Noah, Shem Chom V'Yesus, right? In other words, it's given right away, the names of the children. So why is this different? That's the Archai basically asks, the Eile Toldos, the very beginning of the Parsha, Tzarech Lada'at Aleph, the Malkum Shiatzir, Toldos Yitzchak, is Kereidat Yitzchak, right? It says, these are the generations, these are the people, the children, the offspring of Yitzchak. And then it says, Avram holed is Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. That's not the offspring of Yitzchak, that's the birth of Yitzchak. Then he's lowering his circle of Yaki Avram holed is Yitzchak. What's the point of telling us that Avram gave birth to Yitzchak? Obviously, Yitzchak ben Avraham, right, implies that Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. That question, too, is asked by Rashi, and Rashi, of course, comments that the doubters, expressed wonderment and surprise that Yitzchak could have been born to Avraham Avinu in his old age. So says Rashi, again quoting Chazal, that Yitzchak looked so similar to Avraham Avinu, there was no doubt, no blaming it on the postman or anything like that. It was very, very clear that Yitzchak and Avraham were related to one another. So that's Eile Toldos Yitzchak and Avraham. Avraham holed is Yitzchak. In other words, it was obvious that Avraham holed is Yitzchak. But again, that's certainly not the simple way to read the pasuk, right? Why this unusual expression right in the beginning of the pasuk? So I want to just skip the first paragraph of the answer to the Archaim. The Archaim Kedarko gives multiple answers to try to explain the pasuk, and I just want to skip the next paragraph, which says at the bottom of the page, Od Yirtza. Od Yirtza, Alder Omram Zal, Vayei Oster Lo Hashem, Lefisha Ein Domer, Vuhulei, Tfilat Tzadik Ben Rosh, Tfilat Tzadik Ben Tzashik. As Chazal comments, Gron Yevamos, and Rashi brings it over here, that when both Yitzchak and Rivka davened to the Ribon Shel Olam, God listened to Yitzchak, right? In other words, somehow Yitzchak's prayers were more acceptable to the Ribon Shel Olam, despite the fact that Yitzchak was the tzaddik and Rivka was the tzaddikas, but Yitzchak was the tzaddik who came from a tzaddik. Yitzchak came from Avraham Avinu, and Rivka came from the Tzua. Right? No, she came from a Russia. So Eino Dolme, the Gemara says, you can't compare the tefillah of a tzaddik, son of a tzaddik, to the tzaddik, the son of a Russia. So being that that's the case, says the Arach Chaim, Holomayato, ki mitzad heyoslo av tzaddik, nisratza Hashem lo v'nosan lo bonin. So what was a major factor in the fact that Yitzchak was able to give birth? It was the fact that Yitzchak had a righteous father, had an Avraham Avinu as a father, that in a sense tipped the scales in his favor and enabled HaKadosh Baruch Hu to grant children to Yitzchak Avinu. That was the source. Oh, it says that's Pshat in our Pasuk. For who Omro Avraham holed as Yitzchak, Pirish them souls, the Chutz Avraham holed as a Gomer. Send me our highway with the Pasuk as follows. So Eile Toldos Yitzchak and Avraham. These are the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Who are they? Esav and Yaakov. But how is Yitzchak zocher to have children? After all, Yitzchak had a difficult time being able to produce children. Right? So says the pasuk, Avraham called it Yitzchak. Not Abraham gave birth to Yitzchak, but Abraham enabled Yitzchak to give birth to his own children. That's how the Arachaim teaches that second part of the pasuk. Abraham holed it Yitzchak. Abraham enabled Yitzchak to give birth because the skus of Abraham was what stood Yitzchak in good stead when he was davening for children of his own. So now that phrase is not extraneous. Abraham holed it Yitzchak is not just the same thing as saying the man's name was Yitzchak ben Abraham, right? Yitzchak ben Abraham. So obviously Abraham holed it Yitzchak. No. How is it that Yitzchak was zochah to have children? Them so through the agency of Avraham. Right? So first of all, we should have that one shot in the pulpit that says the Arach.
What about his own yes, the fact that he allowed himself to go with young Hagar?
Oh, so let's hold off. We'll see that in a little bit there, Sasha. Skip another paragraph, and let's just see the bottom paragraph, you know, on the left-hand side. Oh, here most, al ikr told us that tzadikim she'mitzvos amaisim tofen. Another way to read the pasuk, right? Rashi already comments back in Parshas Noach that toldos doesn't necessarily refer to physical offspring. It can refer to spiritual offspring. Ikra toldos seyem shel tzadikim ma'isim tovim. Right? When we talk about the offspring of tzadikim, we mean the ma'isim tovim, the mitzvahs which they perform. That's why the pasuk says, Ela toldos Noach ish tzadik. Right, which on the surface is again a non sequitur. These are the kids of Noah. Noah was a tzaddik. Very nice. He was a tzaddik. What were the names of his children? Right, somebody asks you, you know, what are your kids' names? You say, you know, so and so is a tzaddik. That's very nice, beautiful. Right. So now she comments. Ela told us Noah. These are the things that Noah left behind in this world. What did he leave behind? Not so much the offspring, but we say in English the legacy. This is the legacy of Noah. Noah's legacy. With Noach ish tzaddik, right? So just applying that same logic over here in the pasuk, Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. This is the legacy of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham, the fact that he produced a life of mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. Why is it necessary to say that? Ki liyoshi Yitzchak lo nodu nisyonoso v'gedir sitkuso. You know, it's a funny thing, says the Arach Chaim. You look through Chumash, you get a very hazy image of who Yitzchak was. We know a lot about Avraham Avinu. We know a lot about Yaakov Avinu. We don't read much in Chumash about Yitzchak Avinu. He's very much a mysterious individual, right? He comes into the world, and pretty much the next thing we know about him is that he's been brought to the Akedah, and pretty much the next thing we know about him after that is that he's getting married and having children, the prophets. And then more or less after Parshas Tzaddik, Yitzchak Avinu disappears from the Chumash. We don't really read about it much. So the full extent of Yitzchak's tzidkus is not even fully known to us. The agam shepasha savoro agavi hamizdeach. So you'll say, what do you mean we don't appreciate the tzidkus of Yitzchak Avinu? After all, he was almost brought as a carbon by the Akedah. Certainly the Akedah, you know, should serve as testimony to the incredible tzidkus of Yitzchak. Any dover zer mavur b'Torah, that tzidkus of Yitzchak is not explicit in the Torah. Ad kidei kach, the ad hayom yesh mefarshim ki bal korcho ne'ekad. Such that to this day, says the Arach Chaim, there are those who say that Yitzchak did not willingly present himself to be a sacrifice. Avraham Avinu bound Yitzchak against his will. Now he refers over here to the commentary of the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra takes a very non-traditional approach to the whole story of the Akedah. He bursts all the bubbles, you know, which we always assume from Chazal when we read about the Akedah. Again, the classical interpretation of Chazal is that the Akedah took place when Yitzchak Avinu was 37 years old. He was already an adult by anybody's standard. And, you know, clearly for Avraham Avinu to have bound Yitzchak on the Mizbeach when he was 37 could only have been accomplished with Yitzchak's consent. I mean, Yitzchak Avinu, a 37-year-old man, is not going to just let himself be, you know, roughed up by a 137-year-old man, right? So clearly, with that understanding, you know, Yitzchak Avinu was a willing sacrifice. But the Ibn Ezra challenges that interpretation of the Akedah. The Ibn Ezra says, you know, how could that be? Hylokim, you saw it's Avraham. It was a test of Avraham. It was not a test of Yitzchak. So the Ibn Ezra interprets that Yitzchak Avinu was a young boy, 12 maybe, you know, he was a kid. And Avraham Avinu basically took him, and he didn't want to go, Yitzchak. You know, Avraham Avinu forced him down and tied him up, and Yitzchak Avinu was screaming, "No, no, no, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm not interested in, you know, I don't want to die. I'm not ready." Right? So, and that's why it says the Ibn Ezra, it wasn't really a test of Yitzchak Avinu, it was a test of Avraham Avinu. Right? Now, the Or HaChaim disagrees with Ibn Ezra, but he acknowledges that where did Ibn Ezra get this shot from? Ibn Ezra came to this conclusion, which in the Or HaChaim's opinion is erroneous, precisely because the Chumash is very silent about the role of Yitzchak Avinu by the Akedah. Obviously, if the Ibn Ezra can read the Akedah in such a way that Yitzchak was not a willing sacrifice, it means that the Chumash is very ambiguous. Because, you know, the Chumash does not unambiguously present Yitzchak as ready to sacrifice his life and a man of great difficulty. Yeah.
Could we ask, maybe the week before, he asks, I see the fire, where's the sacrifice? He does question his father. And then the other thing that occurs to me is that Yaakov appears three times.
Right.
So there has to be some level of cooperation and partnership.
Right. So again, everything you're saying, Chazal say as well, that Yahdov is indicative of the fact that Yitzchak understood and willingly went to sacrifice himself. And when Avram tells him Elokim Yirlo Asela Olo Bini, Yitzchak gets it. But the Ibn Ezra apparently understands differently. In other words, you could read the Psukim as follows: Yitzchak Avinu is a kid. He asks, "Hey, where's the sacrifice?" Avraham Avinu says, "Oh, we'll figure that out when we get there." And Yitzchak says, "Oh, okay, no problem." Right? Now again, if he's 37, it's harder to say that. But if he's 12, if the Ibn Ezra says he's a kid, so then we, the readers of the Chumash, are struck by the irony of the question, but Yitzchak is not. And when they get there, and Avraham says, "Okay, go lie down over there." He says, "Why?" "Because I'm making you." Right? Now again, the Or HaChaim disagrees. The Or HaChaim understands the story the way the Chazal understands the story. Yitzchak Avinu was a willing, was more than happy to give up his life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the point the Or HaChaim is making is that that's obviously not so clear in the Chumash. We read the Chumash, we clearly see the discourse of Avraham Avinu. We read the Chumash, we clearly see the discourse of Yaakov Avinu. It's possible to read the Chumash and not fully appreciate the discourse of Yitzchak Avinu. That's the point the Or HaChaim is making. Right? As to the that Ibn Ezra did read it that way. If Ibn Ezra writes, the Or HaChaim doesn't think so. Right? But clearly the Ibn Ezra was just reacting to what he understood in the Psukim, namely that it's not clear that Yitzchak Avinu is willingly giving up his life even by the Akedah.
So, what do we mean by Ishtam?
That's Yaakov. Right? Well, then we'll be Yaakov, but the Eila told us Yitzchak and Avram, Habeit Ure'e Hamolid, the Hamuram Kayot Seba. So when the Pasuk says, the Eila told us Yitzchak, then Avraham, the way to read the Pasuk is as follows. These are the Meisim Tovim. Again, told us not in the sense of spiritual offspring. Right? These are the Meisim Tovim. This is the legacy of Yitzchak. He is the son of Avraham. Meaning, whatever greatness you see in Avraham, you can see equally in Yitzchak. This pasuk is the answer to those who would dismiss the character of Yitzchak as being, not really on the same level of Avram and Yaakov. The Ramaz Gam came to Tevas ben Avram, Aberach Omro, ben Chacham, Pirish, Kihu Avram, Bebechinas Atzidkos, Vafladas, Kibato Yitzvorach. Right? He is the ben Avram, he is the continuation of Avram Avinu. Who could see the Yiduyah Gam Kain Omro Ze'ele, the Totepis Vav Kulomar, Motif al Toldosum Shal Avram, on the first and we're told of the Kalamis Yonos, Gam Toldosum Shal Yitzchak Badomen. That as well is the Pshat in the fact that it says Ze'ele told us Yitzchak Ben Avram. And these Beis Vav implies that there's some connection between what's being described now and what came before. What's that connection? Because for the last three parashiyos, we've been reading about the story of Avraham Avinu and his greatness and his nisyonos and his readiness, you know, to do anything for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then Eilat told us Yitzchak ben Avraham, and you should know the Meisim Tovim of Yitzchak are the Eilat. They are a continuation. They are just on exactly the same madrega as the greatness, the great deeds of Avraham Avinu. Right? So in other words, don't sell Yitzchak short, you know, says the Arachayim. Right? Okay. I wanted to take a look a little bit further in the parsha where the sale of the Bechora is described. Again, I'm Kuf Lamed in the Arachayim. Here the Arachayim, just as we saw last week, gets involved in the halakhic discussion. Right? Because in the whole sale of the Bechora that takes place, you know, from when Esau sells it to Yaakov, there are numerous halakhic issues which are raised. They're raised by, you know, the Rishonim already, and the Arachayim makes reference to some of these issues over here. The Arachayim is commenting on Pasuk Chof Hei, I'm sorry, Parak Chof Hei, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Esau has just come back from the field. He says, you know, could you give me some of that stew? I'm pretty hungry. By Yomer Yaakov, right? So Yaakov says, Mikro Chayom Es Becholot Choli. The article translates, sell at this day your birthright to me. So what does that mean? Mikro Chayom Es Becholot Choli. He doesn't say, Mikro Chayom Es Becholot Choli. Sell me today your birthright. Right, which in itself would be difficult to understand. I mean, obviously the transaction is taking place today, right? So what's Mikro Chayom? So Rashi writes, Kitargumo, Kiyom Dilehen, Kiyom Shu, Bolur, Kach Mukhoyu, Mechiro Gururo. Right? Rashi is an interesting shot over here based on the Targum. Chayom means sell me absolutely. Just as the day is clear, so too it should be clear without any strings attached that he was selling me to Bechorah. But that's a funny way to read the pasuk. That's where Rashi reads the pasuk, right? Sell me the Bechorah, Kayom, unambiguously, right? Just as the day is clear. But again, it's hard to understand that one. David, you had a point from before.
Oh, no, I was going to say Kayom, just like
giving you tea. So, like an exchange, sort of. I hear. So, our hand says as follows. And on page Kut Lamed, the left hand column, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. That helps. Right, so the left hand column, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Ayomer Yaakov, Micho Chayom Vechom, Vilgome. Sarech Lagat Omer Kayom Sheim Mashmos. Right, what does the word Kayom mean? Tadir Kiliot Ki Bechorazo Shekona Mimere Yeshba Prophet Sheino Bimesius, El Bimos Ome, Vehem Dabar Shlobo La Olam. If you think about it, the Bechorazo fits the Alaka category of a Dabar Shlobo La Olam. It's an item which has not yet come into existence. Right? And selling an item which has not yet come into existence is a complicated matter in halacha. How do you sell something which doesn't exist yet? I mean, the Bechora is all about certain rights and privileges that will only take effect after the death of Yitzchak Avinu. Right now, those things are not really tangible. They don't really exist yet. So how do you sell something that doesn't yet exist? Right? So, according to Torah law, you're not able to sell something which has not yet come into the world. But then it's Chakei Momar Chayom, Kedei Shetistayim HaMechira. Right? So that's what Yaakov said, sell it to me Chayom, in order that the Mechira should work. How is that? V'u'afim ha'ashalom, matachas v'shiyat abtad tezayin, v'atku ha'fotkem, ha'tayod oni, she'ein lo ma'yocha, she'omar, Mashiyahweh bin Sudasi Hayom Macholcha Mimkaro Kayom. Right, the Gemara of the Messiah says as follows. You have a tracker who's a poor man, right, and he desperately needs money. So he goes into the marketplace in the morning and says, look, you know, I'm setting out a trap. You know, Rabbi, I'd like to sell you whatever my trap traps today. I'm going to come at the end of the day. I'll see that I put out my net in the water. Whatever fish I catch today are yours for the price of, you know, $1,000. Now, right now, that's a Dovah Shalom Balaolam, meaning, he's making this transaction first thing in the morning, right? The net hasn't actually caught anything yet, right? So you would think that it's a Dovah Shalom Balaolam, it's not possible to sell that. Nonetheless, the Gemara passes, the Shulchan Aruch passes, and Karo Kayim. But that particular case works. Why? Right? Essentially, it's a special hector, because the tzayot, the trapper, just needs money to eat. So the halacha waives the normal concept of that you can't sell something which is an intangible, which hasn't come into the world yet. The halacha waives that in view of the fact that this trapper just needs money to eat for that day. The katzu ha-ge'omim, she'en ha-tam toli ba'omro ha-yom, elahu ha-din yom acher min karo ka-yom, Itam kidei chayot, v'lo amru hayom el v'shlo mashi yale v'mitzudot v'shlo shloshim yom oshana shu yoseh mikdei michyat yom echon. Avo michyat yom echon v'chol mitzios shi'i yek chayom. The goal to bring out the point over here is that being mocha and dover shlovo l'olam only works if it's a very, very limited amount. One day's worth of traffic. Because again, you just need, you know, it's like cash and carry. He basically just needs money on the spot. So to be able to sell 30 days worth of prospectus, in other words, you know, whatever my nets are going to catch for the next, you know, the net profit, right? Whatever I'm going to net, you know, in the next 30 days, I'm going to sell to you. That you can't do. But you can say, I'm going to sell to you the trappings of day X, whether it's today or some other day, as long as it's a small amount, a very finite amount, you can sell a dollar shalabola olam, you know, in small quantities. So who amro mikro chayom, pirush kedin yom, right? That is the arachayim, that halacha is pshat in the pasuk. Mikro chayom, sell the b'chola to me the same way that you're allowed to sell a dollar shalabola olam. If it's only the proceeds of one day, mikro chayom, sell to me like one day's worth. What does that mean? Sharei oyei chayom. If you think about the state that Esav was in when he agreed to sell the bechara, then basically Esav was exhausted. Mishum kadei chayom in karo minka. But the same way that the Gemara of Mishia says that the trapper can sell a dover shemo bola olam in order to make money for right now the cash and carry. Right, so too, the Esav has the ability to sell a dover shemobola olam because of his immediate need for the stew. Right, he couldn't have sold a lot, you know, in terms of a dover shemobola olam, but he can sell a limited amount in order to be able to eat on the spot. So sell this bechora to me, even though the bechora is not a limited amount. I mean, the bechora is privileges on top kol hadaros. But sell it the same way that you can sell a dover shalabola olam in order to achieve today chayot, in order to get a certain finite amount of money to operate right now, so too you can sell the bechora in order to be able to achieve today chayot, you know, the amount of stew or whatnot that you need to eat right now in order not to collapse. Right? Mishum today chayot minkaro minkar hagam shum dover shalabola olam. The zuah to steal that ain't been shiachol this cost the mecha habachora, right? Had it not been for this concept that under certain circumstances, in order to get to the chayyuf, you can sell a davar shalavala olam, there would have been no way in halacha for the transaction of the bechora to have taken place, because otherwise we run into that problem of selling a davar shalavala olam. So chayom is the essential word. Says the Arachayim in the sale that takes place between the two of them, because otherwise, it just halachically, the sale is not going to work. The Yitzchak of Dibra Yaakov Kiomro, Hineho Lehulechwamos, Veilacha Takonis Bishum Kadechai Gedolam Yizel. When Esau comes back and says, Hineho Noki, Olechwamos, look, I'm about to die, what that means in our context, says the Arachayim, is that this Kadechayov, the need for me to eat, justifies the sale of a davar shel abal la'olam. Ordinarily, I wouldn't be able to sell something which has not yet come into the world, but the fact that I need money up front alludes to the heter given by the halacha to sell a davar shel abal la'olam in order to, you know, in a limited sense, in order to make a certain finite amount of money off of such a sale. Right? Fascinating. But to deal with the next piece from the Arachayim, again, this is Parakhafei Pasuk Lamed Gimel. By Yomer, so Yaakov says to Esau, oh yeah, you're going to sell me the Bukhara? He shavu li kayom. Right? You should swear to me. By Yishavu, and Esau swears to him, by Yinkar to Bukhara to Yaakov, and he sells the Bukhara to Yaakov. Says the Arachayim, Hans Yerushruch Lishfua. Why was there a need for an oath over here? Right? I mean, ordinarily, an oath means I promise to do something in the future. But if the sale is taking place now, so you don't need any oaths. Right? There's an oath, it's a promise, you're going to do something. But we just have to, are explaining that it's not the ace of promises that he will sell the Bukhara to Yaakov. He is selling the Bukhara to Yaakov. This is the sale that's taking place right now. So once the sale is done, why a shvuah? Why an oath? Right? If you sell me something, we don't need an oath in order to seal the deal. An oath is not an element of transaction. Right? So what's the need for the shvuah? So we write the following. The oath pH the Bukhara Prasim Shain Bar Shain Bahim Mamish. Kmoha Kavo Zahamaila Shalem Hikta Yaakov Ahoda Pesa Lokeno Shiva Bukhara. Right? What is the Bukhara? So some parts of the Bukhara are tangible. Right? In other words, a double portion of the property, you know, after the father dies and things like that. But certain elements of the Bukhara are non-tangible items. Forget about the fact, you know, in the previous piece he dealt with the fact that the Bukhara hasn't actually come into existence yet. Right? That's one aspect of the Bukhara. But even when the Bukhara does come into existence, not all of it can be pinned down tangibly. There's a certain covet that comes with being the Bukhara. Right? What is that? You know, how do you define that in tangible terms? That's not like getting a double portion of Pishnayim, you know, in the property. It's an intangible thing. Or what Chazal say, the fact that Yaakov says the Bukhara is all about the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. Right, Rashi brings. Okay, what is that? That's not something clearly tangible. That's a privilege, that's a right, that's a responsibility. How would you put a price tag on that exactly? Right? It's the Bukhara by its very nature involves certain elements which are not tangible.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Confused me about the story is how the brother is selling the food to begin with. If I went home and I was hungry, my brother was cooking, and
right.
I went to some food and he demanded payment, I would probably use some choice words.
Right. So there's two things to say offhand. First of all, you should know that there's an interesting machlokes harishonim that Rosh Hashanah brings us and others, that some read the psukim to say that he gave him the food for free. But then he said, by the way, while you're hungry, you know, I'd like you to sell me the Bukhara. And he sold him the Bukhara for money. Right? That's from Rishonim Lurim Pshat in the psukim. Now that doesn't totally answer the question because still, you know, just what he's taking advantage of the guy, you know, in his time of need. So essentially the issue comes down to as follows. Yaakov realized that Esav was not a good candidate to hold on to the Bukhara, right? To put it mildly. And, under those circumstances, Yaakov said, whatever we can do to get Esav to sell this to me. I mean, Yaakov could have, you know, in theory, you know, taken the Bukhara from Esav by force or something like that, or started a war after Yitzchak died. Yaakov wanted everything to be done legally and to be done fairly and to be done correctly, but he realized that it would be a travesty to leave the Bukhara in the hands of somebody who was clearly so unworthy of having the Bukhara. So, you're right, you know, it's not the most brotherly thing to do to say, okay, you're collapsing, so why don't you sell me the Bukhara, you know, at this particular moment. But nonetheless, you know, looking down the line and realizing, you know, the ultimate fate of Klal Yisrael, you know, that was much better off to have Yaakov in charge rather than Esav in charge. You know, Yaakov thought that this was the right thing to do. Yeah, the Archaim says. I'm just reading the Archaim. But what you see from the story, though, and frankly you see it later on in Chumash Bereishis, where Yaakov Avinu essentially takes the Bechorah away from Reuben, right, which also happens later on in the story, that since, although obviously you can't change the biological fact of who came first, the rights and privileges and responsibilities that are conferred upon the person by being born first can be transferred. Right? In other words, that's what you see clearly from the story. The Bechara is not just you get it because of a biological act of birth, but you can sell it. In other words, it's not like having a certain birthday. You can't sell your birthday. I like my birthday. I'll get a better birthday, right? I'll sell it to somebody else. We'll change birthdays. That's silly, right? But the being of the Bechar, it's not just a question of biology, it's a question of privileges, and you can lose the Bechara, as did Reuven, and you can transfer the Bechara, as did Esau.
So, the Bechara, the Kahan would get here, I can't transfer, change his status. I can't say, well, I want to sell my thing. He can contribute to claim, he's one of claim, he's a buy claim, and he can pass it on to say
he was
good. Right, so. The same thing being the Bechara, the same thing, so, if that's the status, and she said it's not a buy,
Right. I mean, you see, it didn't stay with the Bechara in any way.
Right.
So it's an interesting question. In other words, why is it that by Bechara we see you can transfer it, by the Kahanim you see once the Kohen owns the Kohen, you know, you can't add it, you can't drop it, you can't transfer it, you know, anything like that. It could be that that's a special. You know, the truth is that the Bechara model is the more intuitive model. In other words, if I have a privilege or a right or responsibility, in most areas of life, I can get rid of it or give it to somebody else. In other words, if I have a job, most areas of life, I can quit my job, I can transfer my job, I can somebody else take my job. You know, I think the cash is more on the Kohanim. How come the Kohanim are stuck as Kohanim? Right? And I think there, that's really the bracha that Yaakov Avinu and then subsequently Moshe Rabbeinu bestow upon Shevet Levi, Yosimu Kitzara Biatecha V'Cholil HaMizbechecha, that basically, you know, the Levim, the Kohanim, are dubbed as such, and it's such an incredible bracha, they can't get rid of it. Right? Even if they wanted to. But that's a Kiddush. No, the Kiddush is the fact that Kohanim stay Kohanim, right? The fact that prior to Kohanim, it's a job like anything else, and you could, you know, in theory, transfer it, change it, switch it, you know, all that kind of stuff, that maybe in a certain sense is more intuitive, that should be the way that it should work.
But we may have been told that the Kohanim had this step, we could see it before Pasha's Queen Jesus tried to prepare whatever special. It's like they weren't close to the first line.
Right, I mean, well, I just, on the subject of Kavod Rabban Shalom, I mean, just a little bit later in the Pasha, so Rashi brings from the Pirkei de Rebbe letter that the Shnei Gedoye Ethan, right, the two goats, were the Kohen Kedesh and the Kohen Chagiga, right? So, again, perhaps, you know, again, you get the impression that there were some kind of kabbalas that were happening even then, and the shaila between Yaakov and Esav was who was responsible for the kabbalas even back then, at the time of Yitzchak Avinu.
I think there's a couple of things. First of all, the menu. He wasn't scrambling eggs. He was not making the lentils because it was the material of what he knew. And the notion of Roy, whether he was worthy, because apparently it was all in the heat, there were five things that he did on that particular day. First, someone drank the woman, he wasn't with him. And the thing that I want to say is you saw this last week in terms of buying the Barak Makbelah. There's finality and legality in a sale. So this is a sale that's not something that you can renege or say, well, there's a misunderstanding or what one intended or what one understood. So the sale has finality or legality, if you will. So maybe that's the purpose of the sale over the bowl of lentils.
Okay, so very good. Let me just hear from Willie and then follow up on that point in a second.
Well, what you did, Rob also said that for the gap was so that Asaph was a lawyer. Mm-hmm. The brothers were for the Bukharis. So I saw somewhere today that he named Ephraim and Moses. So Moses and Ephraim. With all these, Asaph said, what do I need all this stuff for? I see in the future I have to bring me so easy to be high in Misa and Bukharis. People know you certain things. So what do I need it for?
Rashi brings that he rejected the whole avos of this thing. He didn't know if he held this one most, right?
So he's
right. I'm gonna get that, you know, for one wrong step that I'm dead meat, you know. Let me look up what Charlie said from a moment ago. So Charlie mentioned that the sale had a certain finality to it. That gufa is what the archive is asking over here. The sale is such a final and binding element. What role does the shvuah play above and beyond that? Why do you need an oath? You know, if I'm telling you something and it's, you know, and it's done, why an oath? Yeah.
Because Asaph doesn't have any credibility. He's not a trustworthy personality. Not here and not.
Right. So Asaph is not credible, but then that begs the question. So if he's really not credible, what's an oath going to help? Right. So he swore to me. He'll deny it. He'll deny swearing. Right, this guy who's out doing the five different things, he's not going to be afraid of breaking an oath. Right, so what role does the oath play? Our kind here also answers based on Gemara. Right, so Yaakov Avinu was a Lamban, he's from Yosheva Avim, so he knew the Makaris. Right, so he writes as follows. So Kedita Arteinu Akdosha, the third line on page Kuf Lamed Aleph, Kedita Arteinu Akdosha, according to our Holy Torah. It's impossible, according to Torah law, to sell something which is an intangible. Well, then it's talking with folks about Dorah Yidei Shvua. Right? So the Shvua was necessary in order to acquire the Bechora, because the Bechora, forget about the fact that the Bechora is a Dorah Shalom Bala Olam, it's something which doesn't as of yet exist. It's also something which is intangible. How do you transfer covet from one person to the next in a legal sense? So says the Arachayim, you can't. What are you going to do? You're going to, you know, I'm going to pay you $5, you know, to get your covet. You know that the covet which was due you should be transferred to me. How do you transfer covet? How do you transfer privilege? Shvuah can do that. He'll go on to explain how. A shvuah can do that even when a regular transaction cannot. Yeah.
Is this shvuah different from what Avraham Avinu asked of Eliezer on his way to Haran? He asked
him to take a shvuah. I think it's the same kind of shvuah, but there again, there's no transaction between Avraham and Eliezer. In other words, you know, here, supposedly there's a transaction going on between Yaakov and Esau. So once there's a transaction, why do you need a shvuah?
Right.
So the answer is because transactions only really work for things that are tangible. Things that are intangible require a shvuah. He goes on to prove that. Right? So the role of the shvuah is to transfer those elements of the Bechara which lack tangibility. Now the shvuah will not work to alleviate the problem of davar shlo bala olam, something which has not yet come into the world. Because why can't you sell something that's lo bala olam? Because the buyer doesn't really 100% agree to the sale, because again, it's easier to agree to a sale for something that exists. It's harder to really sign off on a sale, in other words, to buy something that doesn't as of yet exist. You know, the Gemara assumes that the buyer doesn't do so wholeheartedly. I mean, you know, you want to sell me the 72nd Street Bridge. I say, what 72nd Street Bridge? Any day now, I'm going to start building the 72nd Street Bridge, which is just signed here on the dotted line. So, as I'll say, I can't, even if I go through the motions of buying it, that's not really a transaction, because, you know, you can't say that the buyer really is wholeheartedly buying. He thinks the whole thing is a joke also. Right? So, you know, you need both things, right? You need the idea of kayom, that you can sell a davar shelobal la'olam when there's a pressing need, right? And that transaction is considered to be binding. And you need the shvuah to address the issue of the intangible aspects of the bechorah, which need to be transferred as well. I want to skip forward a little bit up to the second part of the parasha. But of course, we know we have the brachos and the unusual way in which Yaakov Avinu, you know, takes the brachos, so to speak, away from Esav and is blessed by Yitzchak Avinu. Yeah.
How did this transaction
impact
on Yitzchak? In other words, did Yitzchak know that the sale took place?
Oh, Kavaldik. So obviously you're a plant in the audience. David asked, does Yitzchak know about the sale and all this stuff? I mean, we have the sale at the beginning of the Pasha, which you would think would then obviate the whole issue of the brachos later on in the Pasha. In other words, Yaakov should just go to Yitzchak and say, guess what? I bought it. It's mine. Right? So let's turn to page Kuf Lamed Tes, with the Archaim address this briefly, and then make another point. Kuf Lamed Tes, the bottom of the right-hand column. Yitzchak calls in Esav b'no ha-gadol, right? Esav, his older son. And of course, the Archaim is sensitive to that pasuk. Of course we know that Esav is the older son, right? If you've been following the parasha up to now, you realize that. Why does the Chumash single out Esav as b'no ha-gadol, the older son of Yitzchak? Why does it single out Esav as b'no ha-gadol, the older son of Yitzchak? So the Sinat Tam, Lama lo kara li Yaakov, right? The pasuk is explaining, why didn't Yitzchak call in Yaakov, kizeh ha-bechor, right? Because after all, Yaakov at this point was the bechor. Perhaps Yitzchak was not aware of the sale. So in other words, you know, the sale had taken place, but for whatever reason, Yaakov didn't reveal the sale to Yitzchak. So Yitzchak was unaware, and that's why he calls in Esav, thinking that Esav is still the Bechor, right? And therefore he's deserving of the brachos. But there must be more to it than that, because again, you know, first of all, the Archaim says, Ulai lo yada me'amecha. Maybe he wasn't aware of the mecha, right? But that implies maybe he was aware of the sale, right? And if he was aware of the sale, again, the question raises itself. So why is Yitzchak calling an Esav for a bracha? And what's more, so why wouldn't Yaakov have just told Yitzchak of the sale? And that way we could have avoided this whole issue. So the Archaim says the following. Very fascinating idea. The time Yitzchak Shahayu Chafetz Bazar Esav HaRasha. Why did Yitzchak want to bless Esav the Rasha? Now, you might answer, he didn't know that Esav was the Rasha. That might be the simplest answer. But that's hard to say on several levels. First of all, we're talking about Yitzchak Avinu, somebody who had prophecy, right? So, I mean, Chazal tell us that Yitzchak is aware when Yaakov is unaware, when the brothers sell Yosef, right? By Yaakov, so obvious, Yitzchak bemoaned the fact that Yaakov was so torn up over the sale of Yosef, because Yitzchak prophetically knew what was going on, even though Yaakov did not, and Yitzchak was under oath from Hashem not to reveal to Yaakov what had taken place. So if Yitzchak is so prophetically aware of the sale of Yosef, how come he can't figure out what's happening under his own nose? You know, that Esav is clearly not deserving of the brachos, whereas Yaakov is, right? Also, there are other indications, even in Rashi, that Yitzchak is you know, has some inkling of the character of Esau or Russia. Right? Esau, you know, Yitzchak sends Esau out, you know, to get food for him, and he tells him, don't bring me Minageza. Don't bring me stolen stuff. Right? So if he thinks that Esau is the greatest tzaddik since sliced bread, you know, so like, well, of course he's not going to bring him stolen stuff. When Yaakov comes back, and, hold on 1 second, I'm sorry. Okay, so first of all, so again, so Esau, you know, Yitzchak, when he sends out Esau to get the food, he says, don't bring me Minageza, don't bring me stuff that's stolen. Right? Again, a little bit odd if he thinks Esau is a tremendous tzaddik, why would he tell him not to bring him stuff which is stolen? Then, you know, Yaakov comes in masquerading as Esau. Yitzchak asks him, how'd you get here so fast? He says, because God made me come so fast. Yitzchak says to himself, hey, wait a minute, you know, Esau never talks like that. That's a very slim way of talking. Right? Esau would never talk like that. So if you know that Esau doesn't talk like that, he never mentions God's name, so why do you think it's such a big topic? Right? I mean, again, you know, like it's hard to imagine that Yitzchak has no idea what's going on with Esau. So since the Arachayim, so why Taka? Tam Yitzchak Shaya Chavis Lavar Esau Barasha? So why Taka? Was Yitzchak so interested in giving a bracha to Esau? Kishchashav Shebe Emsaus HaBrachos Yitzchatech Lemidas HaTov Yitzchak Drachos. Yitzchak knew full well who Esau was. Because Esau was a Rasha, that's why Yitzchak wanted to give the brachos to Esau. Because what? Because the brachos, you know, he hoped that through giving him the brachos, he would get Esau to turn around and embrace his good side as opposed to his bad side. Ki atzadikim yichavu ba'asos b'neihem resha. A tzadik is tamed when his son engages in evil. V'hoyo mishtadeli mo v'hetis. And he tries, the tzadik does everything to try to get his son to come back and do what's right. V'efsha shahoyo mo'il. And perhaps, you know, this will actually help. So let's just analyze what the Zohar kind of thinks. The fascinating insight and fascinating way of looking at the story. And I think has a lot of applicability to chinuch in general, right? What were the brachos that Yitzchak was going to give to Esau and ended up giving it to Yaakov? He gave him brachos of prosperity. You know, that gashmius, right? So in other words, you know, that the people should, you know, you should lord over people. Yazduch ha'amim, yishachav v'lo'lo'umim. Right, all kinds of physical brachas. Basically, what he's trying to do is he's trying to build Esau up. He's trying to tell Esau, I know you're not really deserving of these brachas, but you know what? I'll give you these brachas in the hopes that my expression of confidence in you will enable you to live up to what these brachas are. Mashallah, right? I've had this on numerous occasions. You have a kid in your class, right? And the kid is not really an A student. Sometimes he's not even close to being an A student. Sometimes he doesn't even know what the letter A looks like. He's never seen one on a report card, right? Except maybe he has one in his name. That's as close as he got, right? But sometimes you make a cheshbon. Again, it depends on the kid, depends on the circumstances. Sometimes you make a cheshbon. You know what? If I give this kid an A, that will give him the sense of confidence that I have in him. And he'll work up to that A. In other words, that will give him the sense that I value him, that I think that he's on the right path, and that will give him the chizik that he needs to become an A student. Yitzchak Avinu knew who Esav was. He gave him the brachas so as to say, I hope that you can grow into these brachas. Right? And that's why he doesn't want to give the brachas to Yaakov. Right? And according to this pshat, you know, the Arachayim is saying, perhaps Yitzchak knew that Yaakov has bought the Bechorah from Esau. Right? In other words, he knows that Yaakov is the more deserving one. He's giving Esau the brachos because he's the less deserving one. Because the hope is that by giving him these brachos, maybe that will encourage you to be the kind of person who actually does deserve these brachos. It's a tremendous insight in terms of chinuch. Right? In other words,
you treat the kid as if he's worth $1 million, and maybe Taka one day will become like that. Yeah.
I'm a great believer in motivation and incentivizing. So with this said, how then do we explain Rivka Bas Basuel and the disguise and so on? He's a Bob Mirabal. So I mean, like, what's that all about? Because you're fooling your dad, and why was it necessary? And what was why would Rivka not understand what you and your time just as fight for? Why wouldn't she participate with Yitzhak's belief and aspiration and motivation and incentivizing based on what changes character?
Right, so the question is, so what did Rivka say? Right? In other words, Yitzchak has such a great svara, according to the Arachayim, you know, forgiving the brachos to Esav, despite the fact that he understands full well who Esav is. So how come Rivka didn't buy into this? So there are two kinds of people, you know, who don't really deserve that aid. There's the kid who you look at and you see, you know what? He has the potential. He can become that A student. He just needs that encouragement, you know, to push him that extra mile, lift him up, and then he's going to be awesome, right? Then there's the kid who doesn't show up the entire semester, and it's not because, you know, he's struggling with this, he's struggling with that, he just blows the whole thing off, and walks through the day of the final, takes the final, you know, he makes sure that you're actually the Rebbe that he's supposed to hand the final into, because he's not totally sure. He saw your name on his rock, you know, he saw your name, but he's not sure which of the guys with the beard up in the front is actually his Rebbe, right? So, and he walks in and he can't understand why he didn't get an A, because after all, he's a bright guy, and he got 100 on the final. Right? That guy you don't give an A to. Right? In other words, there's an A as a motivation, as an encouragement for somebody who you feel, you know, is trying on a certain level, and needs the A, you know, to just boost his spirits. And if the guy just blows the whole thing off and is a total faker, and that guy you want to kick in the pants. That guy, Sakir, if you give him the A, you're just going to encourage him to lead a life of, you know, of irresponsibility, right? That guy, that guy, when he walks in and he aces the final because he's so bright that, you know, he does the material without any difficulty and he just blew up the class because it was so simple for him to do so, that guy you fail. Because that's the way he's going to learn his lesson in life. So Rivka and Yitzchak were arguing about what kind of guy is Esav. Right? Yitzchak looked at Esav and he said, oh, good to the Shama, you know. Look, Nebuch, you know, he's off the derech, you know, he's this, he's that, you know, but if we build him up, he'll be awesome. Rivka looked at him and said, Yitzchak, what are you talking about? This is a guy, he knows how to play the system. You're going to give him brachos and make him out like he's such a big tzaddik and such a wonderful guy, so he's going to take you to the cleaners. Right? And that's what Rivka says, you know, you got to just, you know, you can't give him the brachos under any circumstances. In a sense, and this is the Farshim say, so why go through a demirma with deceit? Because Rivka is conveying a very important message to Yitzchak. Esav fooled you. Right? The same way that you can be fooled by a Yaakov, Esav fooled you. You don't understand what he's all about. He's not this poor Nebuch guy who just needs a little bit of chizik and he'll be fine. He's an operator. And if he's an operator, by giving him the A, you're not doing him any favors. Right, that's the machlokes between Yitzchak and Rivka. They understand the way it's going. Yitzchak is not living in a dream world, right? But, you know, when you're trying to figure out what a person is all about, you know, you could look at the same person, you can say, Nebuch, he's struggling, or you could say, no, he knows how to play the system full well. We understand what he's all about. That's Yitzchak and Rivka.
I'm just wondering, but the Arachayim's shot that he saw, this is maybe an encouragement to turn over his way, that Yitzchak knew about it, what's going on, and then the pretense that he saw the Bechara, but he figured that's going to reverse in the future, was just by the Pasuk itself. He saw it was by Yigras, he said, but they are Gadol, the terrorist town, he's calling him, but they are Gadol. So supporting him that I'm going to give him the same profit as part of the Bechara, he thought that he supposedly sold it.
And that's Zayn of God, he's going to go into that being a God.
So either the Lord of is supporting the Tabith, it's possible, vice versa.
Right, 100%. I mean, consider what the Pope is very, very well. Right, let's just see the last couple of words in the Archaim. The Timsa שאמר זאת כי ננש יעקב שמונה דינו מאיסור שאפשר שאיסור מסירות למוטוב הרי שאפשר לא לעשות למוטוב. Right? And I'll give you a raya that maybe Esav wasn't quite as bad a guy as we think. Chazal tell us that Yaakov, you know, nailed, again, we know the famous story, Yaakov nailed Dina into a box when Yaakov encountered Esav years later. Why? Because Esav will see her and want to marry her, and Achim Zeh, you know, I mean, as bad enough as Esav was as a brother, I can't really imagine having Esav as a son-in-law, right, that didn't have that in mind, right? So, I guess there'll be a fulfillment. Yaakov Edom, Tiagol Berishana, right? The Edom would be the first one to start up with Yaakov under those circumstances, right? So, and Chazal says that Yaakov really was punished because he nailed Dina into the back. Because maybe Taka, he should have let Dina marry Esav, and Taka Dina would have enabled Esav to do Shuvah, right? So that's an incredible chazal on many, many levels. You know, really, that's expected of Yaakov and Dina to give themselves up. You know, because maybe they bring Esav back to Teshuva. Right? So when you go out on dates, you know, you're supposed to look for a guy who's really like a Rosh Marusha, because maybe you'll get him to Teshuva. That's supposed to be the criteria for getting married, right? But, I mean, leaving aside that aspect of chazal, which is difficult to understand, the Arachayim says you see clearly that Esav was Teshuva material. Chazal felt so. Right, so if Chazal say that Esav could have done Shuvah, there was what to work with over here, right? So that's what Yitzchok thought. You know, Esav's a bad guy, but we can bring him back. And how do you bring him back? You build him up. You build him up. You give him an A in the course, and you let him know that, you know, you don't really deserve this, but you'll grow into this. And that's a mahalach. That's the way to the mechanic people, you know, in the proper way. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up next week. And we'll continue with Pashas Vayishlach.
Thank you very much.